Gaurya, Sitar, Sadashishi, Madhis, Divine Grace, Asi, Bhaktivedanta, Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada, Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Anantakoti, Vaishnava, Vrinda, Ki Jai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Thakur, Ki Jai. Prem, Shikho, Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhanichananda, Shri Dwaita, Gadadhar, Shri Vasadik, Vor, Bhakta, Vrinda, Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gogopina, Shaima Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan, Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesa Sunnivadi Paskatya De Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chupascha Kipasindaviya Bachapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Muted. Unmuted.
It's July 6, 2022. From Hawaii, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Text 28. So this is a prose verse. Anyasyam api jayayam trayaha putra asan uttamas tamso raivata iti manvantar adipatayaha. Anyasyam, other, api, also, Jayayam, in the wife. Trayaha, three. Putraha, sons. Asan, there were. Uttama tamasaha raivataha. Uttama tamasaha and raivata. Iti, thus. Manu antara, of the manvantara millennium. Adipattayaha, rulers.
Srila Prabhupada's... Sorry, I muted everybody too early.
That's
sorry.
Fine. Srila Prabhupada's translation. In his other wife, Maharaj Priyavrata begot three sons named Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. All of them later took charge of Manvantara millenniums. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In every day of Brahma, there are 14 Manvantaras. The duration of one Manvantara, the lifespan of one Manu, is 71 yugas. And each yuga, that means a yuga cycle of the four yugas together, so 71 times the four yugas. And each yuga is 4,320,000 years. Almost all the Manus selected to rule the Manvantaras come from the family of Maharaj Priyavrata. Three of them are particularly mentioned herein, namely Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. Anyasyam api jayayam traya putra asan uttamas tamaso raivata iti manvantar adipattayaha. In his other wife, Maharaj Priyavrata begot three sons named Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. All of them later took charge of manvantara millenniums. So what really struck me in this verse is Maharaj Priyavrata had two wives. One is Bahirshmati. Bahirshmati is mentioned by name. This wife is not. She's just the other wife. Bahirshmati has 10 sons and a daughter. This wife has 3 sons. And as we'll read in the following verse, Maharaj Priyavrata was very attached to Queen Brahishmati. Extremely attached to Queen Brahishmati, and there's no mention at all of his emotional relationship with this wife. At the same time, she produces these three sons, and they and their descendants become the Manus, who have great significance in the universe. I mean, so do the sons of her co-wife, but her sons are very notable. And so I was really meditating on the fact that each of us is simultaneously very insignificant and very significant. Because this wife is, she's so insignificant that her name is not mentioned, and she doesn't seem to have the same emotional relationship with her husband that her co-wife has. And yet she's significant enough to be in the Bhagavatam and to have her children be managing the universe directly under Lord Brahma. So there is a similarity here to that of every single jiva. We are, on the one hand, very insignificant, and on the other hand, very significant. And we're going to look at how these things interplay and how we can meditate on and act upon both our insignificance and our significance in a way that brings us closer to Krishna. So let's look at our insignificance. As we see here, her name is not even mentioned, and this is actually quite common in the Bhagavatam that the wife's name is not mentioned. So in the genealogical lists that occur in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes the name of the wife is given, but the majority of the time the name of the wife is not given. The name is forgotten. And in fact, there are many names that are not given. If we look at the list in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta put together of the parampara, Srila Prabhupada specifically tells us that not all of the names are there. And anyone who does a little historical research will also know that it's not that every single person in the line has been mentioned. Just the main persons have been mentioned, and sometimes it's a diksha connection that's mentioned, and sometimes it's a siksha connection that's mentioned. And our disciplic succession, if you think about it for a moment, it's going to have many, many, many branches. This is just one line. So in the last few months, I was contacted by a distant member of my family who has compiled now a very detailed genealogical tree. And then she made a second genealogical tree of people who weren't blood relatives, but like, you know, some ex-wife or ex-husband and their family. Anyway, it took her months and months and months to compile this very detailed genealogical tree and to find out everybody. But if I'm going to just trace back my ancestry, I'm just going to be going along, if you can picture a tree, so a tree that, not like a palm tree, but a tree that has many, 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 many branches, if you're at the tip of one branch and you're going to follow that branch back to the trunk, you're going to be ignoring the vast majority of the branches and sub-branches of the tree. So, you know, if I'm looking at my family, just my parents and their parents and their parents, so then I'm not looking at aunts and uncles and cousins and all that kind of stuff that she's looking at in her very detailed tree. So in the same way, listing the disciplic succession, it's just listing one way of going back. It's not listing all of the sub-branches and so forth. And the same with the genealogical tables. And then if we think about that, even if your name is mentioned, sometimes it's just the name. In many of the genealogical tables in the Bhagavatam, all that's mentioned is a name. You know, so-and-so had such-and-such child, and they had such-and-such child, and they had such-and-such child, and they had such-and-such child. And that's it. Nothing whatsoever about that person's life. Now, the person must have been highly significant in order just to have their name mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because again, not all of the names in history are mentioned, just the most important ones. And still, sometimes all it is a name. Yeah? So we can think about this in terms of our own insignificance. I mean, we're probably not going to be even in a list in a Bhagavatam. We're probably not even going to be listed as spouse of, like here, the other wife. We're probably not even going to be listed like that. There's probably not even a reference without a name that's going to be made to us in the spiritual history books or in any history book. We're likely not to be mentioned anywhere, in any line, by anyone. If someone writes up the disciplic succession tree 500 years from now, we're not likely to be mentioned in that tree. Again, we're not likely to be mentioned anywhere. I mean, it was interesting, this relative doing this genealogical tree. I mean, she had to work sometimes weeks just to find out some basic information about one family member. I mean, I had a nephew who died when he was 27, and she was trying to find out where he was buried, and I didn't know. And his mother and father have my sister and brother-in-law, they've both passed away. And his two remaining full siblings, they didn't know. His half-sibling, she didn't know. Nobody knew. I mean, we had to get a death certificate. And she's too distant a relative, so I had to apply to get the death certificate to find out where he was buried. And that's all that's listed on the chart, you know, born here, died here, buried here, and that's like it. You know, so we're very insignificant, and in time we're forgotten completely. I mean, just completely. That there's nobody remembers our names. Prabhupada talks about how, you know, he went back to Calcutta and he was saying, "Where are my family members now? They're just a list of names." But eventually, we become we're not even on a list of names. And the tombstones are forgotten and the names are worn off on the tombstones. Even you go to Vrindavan and there's the many places where sadhus have been buried, either their bodies or their ashes. But often there's just a marker. There's kind of this like linga type marker that's there, or some little square marker or something that looks like a little altar. But often there's no name. And there's just this marker. We see this around Govardhan, that you go around Govardhan and there's these just stone markers that some sadhu or some sadhu's ashes are buried there. There's a place right across from Lalitakund that's like that. And like I say, there's not even a name. And of course, for many other sadhus, their ashes are just thrown in the Yamuna or just thrown in the Ganga. There's no marker at all. And again, the name is long gone. What to speak of anything that anyone accomplished? And if we look, you know, I'm sure we've all done this and all felt a little overwhelmed by this. You know, if I look right now out my window, so it's a rather small window and it's partially covered by a curtain right now, but I can see just through this portion of my window hundreds of living beings. And if I walk outside and look around, then there are millions, billions of living beings all around me. You know, there's so many different plants, I mean, and so many different insects. It's really overwhelming how many different beings there are. And I was chatting with one devotee the other day. She was going to be giving a class, and she was asking me something about the verse. And I gave her a quote where Prabhupada said that just like there are so many cells in our body, there are cells and microbes and so many things, so we are also like cells in the universal body of God. And she said, "You mean each cell in our body is a jiva?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course. They're all alive." So even within my own body, just sitting right here in my body, you know, I'm the chief soul. I mean, obviously there's Krishna as the chief soul. But I'm the chief soul in this body. I'm the boss in the body. And then I have all these other cells that all have their own little lives. Right? Every neuron in my brain, every muscle in my heart, every little cell in the lungs and the stomach and the skin and the spleen, every bone cell is alive. It's a jiva with their, and each has their own little life. They're each doing their own eating, sleeping, reproducing. I mean, little cells don't exactly mate, they just have mitosis. But, you know, their reproduction and their sleeping and their breathing, and then they die. They go through the birth, growth, production of byproducts, maintenance, dwindling, and death. And they have their own little life and their own little concerns and their own little pains. And I don't know to what extent they have anxieties in a social life. I have no idea. But I'm sure that they have some. Just like we read about trees and how trees have their social life. They communicate through chemicals and they exchange food underground in their roots and so forth. And they have some interaction with the other trees. So many living entities, and who am I? I mean, even if I just look at the human beings on this planet, there's 7 billion human beings. To be 1 out of 7 billion is pretty small. And what to speak of just if I look at all the living entities. And then if I think about, you know, not just all the living entities, in a little plot of land outside, or all the living entities in my body, and if I think about all the living entities on this planet, it becomes uncountable. It becomes actually overwhelming how many jivas there are, each of them with their own concerns, with their own life. The little insect has its concerns. It has its life. It's, where can I find food? Where can I find a mate? How can I keep my little eggs safe, or whatever they think about? You know, there's another bug coming to eat me. They have their own life. And then what about all the planets? You know, the Vedas teach us that each planet is inhabited. And on each planet, there must be as many living beings as there are here. And then beyond the planet, you know, there's the universe. I mean, how can we even understand that? You know, the modern scientists talk about how there's so many solar systems, and the solar systems are in so many galaxies. And this universe is full of so many galaxies, and each of them full of planets. And they're each, according to the Vedas, full of living entities. I mean, how can we even wrap our head around that? And then we have that wonderful pastime where Lord Krishna shows our Lord Brahma, hey, you're in a small universe. You're just in a small universe. You're a four-headed Lord Brahma. There's Lord Brahmas with 10 million heads. Imagine how big that universe is. I can't imagine. I can't even understand how big this universe is. I can't even understand how big the solar system is. I can't even understand how big the planet is. I can hardly understand how big, you know, a city like New York or Chicago is. So there's uncountable universes. So the insignificance of the jiva is... It's inconceivable how insignificant each of us are as jivas. I mean, it can't even, you know, when Mahaprabhu was talking to Vasudev Dutt and said, you know, liberating this universe, this whole universe is like a mustard seed in a bag full of mustard seeds. It boggles the mind completely. And that means if I am insignificant, there's this wonderful pastime. One of Prabhupada's servants tells this story that one of the devotees wrote to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I have a very big problem, and then signed the letter, your insignificant servant. And Prabhupada was laughing, and he said, just see, how can an insignificant servant have a big problem? So that's my level of insignificance. And then what about our level of significance? So this wife of Priyavrata, she's not significant enough to have her name mentioned. And there's nothing whatsoever mentioned about, as I say, her emotional relationship with her husband or her own life. What did she do in her life? So in that respect, she's very insignificant. But in another respect, she's extremely significant. She's married to Priyavrata, who is running the entire universe. She's the queen of the emperor of the universe. Wow. That's pretty significant. And her children and their descendants also run the universe. And they're each running it, each Manu
is living for 71 yuga cycles. So our mathematicians can calculate this. 71 times 4,320,000. And they're ruling everything. They're taking care of everything. So she's certainly significant by virtue of her husband and by virtue of her children. And she's significant enough to merit a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada will tell us that every word, every verse in the Bhagavatam is purifying. So that means that just understanding about her, whose name is not even given here, is purifying. That she's a very great soul. One can understand that most likely she's a very great and elevated living being. So actually every jiva is also significant in the sense of their relationship to Krishna. Just like this wife of Maharaj Priyavrata, she's significant in terms of her service. She's doing service to Priyavrata, who's a pure devotee of the Lord. She's doing service in terms of her children, who are all at least greatly elevated devotees of the Lord. And that is significant. But even the fallen jivas, who aren't doing any intentional positive service, are significant. Krishna says, Iswara sarva bhutanam riddeshair junatistiti. Sarva bhutanam. Krishna says that he is the Lord of every living being, and he's in the heart of every living being. Matasmatir ganam apohanam cha. That Krishna is, that means every living being. That means the little ant. You know, you go outside and there's thousands of ants. And for each ant, Krishna is giving that ant intelligence, knowledge, and forgetfulness. For every flower, every plant, every creature, what to speak of every jiva that's in a human body. Krishna knows. He's able to tell, what are we thinking? How are we feeling? What are we doing? He's aware of all of that. I mean, that means he cares. I have very little awareness of what even those who are very close to me are thinking, feeling, and doing. And I'm here in a community of devotees, and there's many devotees that I see every day or at least several times a week. But I don't know what they're thinking and feeling. I mean, if they tell me, I'll know. But otherwise, I don't just know. And I don't know what they're all doing. I mean, I really have no idea. What are they all doing? I just don't know. I mean, I may see what they're doing if I run into them, but I don't know what they're doing with the rest of their life. You know, I hardly know what I was doing at 9:15 this morning, what to speak of what all these other people were doing at 9:15. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell you, even with the people, unless I live in a house with someone, and even then I don't notice everything that they're doing. You know, even when you share a home with someone, unless it's a very small home and nobody has any privacy, you know, so, but Krishna is aware like that. He's aware. He cares. I mean, honestly, to what extent do I even care? Sometimes people want to go on and on and on telling me their stories of what happened, and frankly, after a while, it's usually boring. Or people want to tell you everything they're thinking and everything they're feeling, and after a while, you're just like, oh, it's boring, hey, if we're going to be honest. But Krishna's paying attention to every thought, every feeling, every action of every jiva. He really cares. He really, really, really cares. And that is all, that is the fact that Krishna cares about every jiva is as inconceivable as the number of jivas. And I give this example all the time. Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayatitara Ham Bhakti Paritam Ashna Prayat Atmanaha. That I was, when I was traveling years ago, I stayed at the home of one devotee, and I've told this story many times. They had many deities on their altar, and among them were a very small set of Jagannath deities, and I'm sure many of you have seen these type of deities, they're probably like they're less than an inch tall, and they're all on one like stand, and there's a backing, there's a wooden backing and a wooden stand, and the length of it is probably 1.5 inches, like maybe 3.5-4 centimeters long, and maybe like 1.5 centimeter high, and they're very, 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 very small deities of Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra. And so next to them, the devotees had put a little cup of water, and it was a very small cup. I mean, the cup was probably a centimeter high, and it literally held one drop of water, like if you took an eyedropper and you put in one drop of water, that it was all that the cup could hold, and with the surface tension, the water was kind of concave, I think, over the top. So one drop of water, you know, if you're giving Krishna one drop of water, but he says, I'm accepting, or we give Krishna one tulsi leaf, or, you know, a few pieces of fruit. And what do we have to give him? Especially, you know, on this planet in Kali Yuga, we really don't have much of anything very nice to give him. Most of the fruits and vegetables that we buy in the market, you know, they've been shipped a long way, and they're not even so full of nutrition and taste. But even if you grow your own stuff, I mean, what is it in comparison to what Indra can offer? And what is it in comparison to the living food that's offered in the spiritual world? I mean, we can't even talk about it. Or a flower. You know, now it's where I'm living, it's the summertime, and so there's all these flowers. But most of the roses, even the roses we grow on the property here, most of them have no fragrance at all. And then there's, you know, marigolds, they have a little bit of a fragrance, and you can offer chrysanthemums. They have a fragrance, though I don't think it's a very nice fragrance. So, you know, we're offering these flowers that have, and it's an offense to offer a flower that has no fragrance. And we're doing the best that we can. You know, we read about the demigods who have these bodies that are perfuming the air for 80 miles around. Their bodies are so wonderfully fragrant. So what am I offering Krishna? You know, the fruits and the flowers and the leaves and the water, I mean, it's really not very meaningful. You know, even if I do something grandiose for Krishna, something really extraordinary, you know, let's say that we build the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, and, you know, say we could contribute personally $1 million to it or something. I mean, what if we think about, you know, again, going back to the insignificance, it doesn't mean much, but it's very significant to Krishna. You know, there's that famous story about Lord Ramchandra that the monkeys were building the bridge, and that some small creature was, you know, the monkeys were taking huge boulders and mountain peaks, and then there was some tiny creature, some accounts say a squirrel, some a spider. Anyway, some small creature that was also contributing. And the monkeys were just discounting this. You know, well, this creature can't do anything. And Ram says, no, this is also important. So we're very significant in terms of love. And I tell this story all the time. I was once giving a class. It was actually in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And there was a woman there who had a one-month-old baby, very small baby. And the whole time in the class, my entire class that I was giving, she was holding this baby, and she was counting this baby's toes over and over and over and over and over again. She was just like looking at each of this little baby's toes. So because there's love, therefore there's significance. Right? Or one of my godbrothers, Gopravindapal, he would tell this story. He had a daughter and twin sons. And one of his sons, when he was 6, picked up a stick from the ground, brings it to his father. Here, Daddy, a stick. And he said that when his little son gave him this stick, he felt overwhelmed with affection. He didn't need a stick. He wanted a stick. It's no value. But because there's love, it has value. So we're all significant to the Lord because he loves us. And what's really interesting is that he actually loves us all equally. I mean, at least it seems from this account, I don't know, I don't want to speak ill of Priyavrata, it seems like he likes Brahishmati better than this other wife. I mean, that's what it seems like. It seems like he's more attached because we have this whole verse about, again, Brahishmati is mentioned by name, this wife is not mentioned by name. And there's this whole long description coming up of how Maharaj Priyavrata was just so entranced with Brahishmati, and there's no description like that of this wife. Of course, we don't seem to have a jealousy problem like happened with his brother, Uttanapad. So, I don't know, you know, the two brothers seem to have this thing going on. So, Uttanapad, he also had two wives, Suniti and Suruchi, and he also favored one of the wives. Of course, that ended up with both being a great benediction and a great catastrophe. It was a great benediction for Dhruva. It was a great catastrophe for Suruchi and her son Uttama. So we don't have any account like that here of there being any ill feeling, and we'll get to that in a moment. But Krishna's not like that. Actually, Krishna's not like that. There's at least one place where Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna is equally loving the cow and Radharani. He says Krishna is embracing Radharani and he's also embracing the cow. You know, and this is a little hard for us to understand. You know, I think in we Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we think that the glorification of Srimati Radharani is the best devotee, or some places it says Maria Soda is the best devotee, means that others are neglected or are lesser in some way. But that's not true. Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he talks about how each cowherd boy feels that he is Krishna's favorite, and he actually is. You know, this, like Krishna's sitting in the circle of the cowherd boys, and each cowherd boy feels, oh, Krishna's looking at me. Or Krishna's in the Rasalila, and he's dancing with each gopi. You know, when Krishna leaves Rasalila, and then he returns. So he's sitting on the cloth, each gopi takes her like chadar cloth or dupatta or something like that, and it of course has picked up the fragrance from her body, her own individual fragrance, and she puts that on the ground and the Lord sits with her, and each gopi sees, oh, Krishna's only sitting with me. In the Ras dance, each gopi's thinking, Krishna's only dancing with me. And, of course, as part of the whole Rasalila, Krishna also goes and enjoys in a separate bower with each gopi. And each gopi is thinking like that. Each queen, right? I've been listening to some Bhagavad Gita classes of Srila Prabhupada, and a number of times Prabhupada talks about Krishna having 16,108 wives, and that Krishna is with each wife. It's not like each wife has to wait for 16,107 days and then she gets to be with her husband. But each wife is thinking, wow, Krishna only, he's only hanging out with me. And with those in parental mood, we have where Krishna expands as each of the boys, so that he becomes the child of each of the parents of Vrindavan. And even with the cows, he expands as each of the calves. And each devotee is thinking, oh, I'm very special. I'm really special. Krishna's only with me. He's not with anyone else. I'm the only devotee in the universe. I'm the only devotee in all creation. The Lord only has eyes for me. He only has care for me. That I am the most significant. I am the most important. Imagine that. You know, that you're with God. And no one else is. Just you and God. That God has apparently neglected everyone else just to be with you. I mean, imagine that. Of all of the uncountable jivas, that he's chosen you. Okay, I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to be with you. And we'll forget about the world. You know, the world will go away. The world, the universe, everything will go to the background. And it will just be the Lord and me. And this is the experience of the pure devotees. This significance beyond significance beyond significance. And one may have great significance also in the service that they're given. I mean, here we find Priyavrata. He's a jiva, just like we are, but as we talked about before, he's the emperor of the universe. That's pretty significant. And his sons are the emperors of the universe. And one may have a service like that. One may have a service like Lord Brahma that makes one very important, is to stand out, to be different, to be distinct from the other jivas in terms of the fame of one's service and the importance of one's service. Sometimes we talk about how, Prabhupada will talk about how in the social body or in the physical body, the head is the most important. Even if you lose your legs, nobody wants to lose their legs, but losing your legs is not the same as losing your head. I mean, even if you lose your stomach, you can be fed with tubes and so forth. I've known people like that, but you know, you lose your head, you're finished. Even if you lose your heart, you can get a heart transplant. They haven't yet done a head transplant. Not sure how that would work. Of course, doctor got a head transplant. But what one can say, you know, this is more important. We can say the emperor of the universe is more important than the person sweeping the street on, you know, planet X in city Y for 5 minutes, you know, that we could say like that. And this conception that some people are more important than others in a practical sense is pervasive. You know, the concept that the head of a country or the head of organizations or people who have a lot of money or whatever, the people who have these any of the six opulences to a great degree, that they have more importance. We deal with them like that practically. The government gives them more importance, the press gives them more importance, people in general gives them more importance. You know, people are eager to hear about what certain people are doing, and they're not so eager to hear about what everybody else is doing. You know, I may be very interested to hear about what some big football player or some movie star or some politician is doing, but I'm not so interested to hear about what, you know, Susie working the cash register at their local grocery store is doing. So the jiva can have great significance in service like that. That's also possible. But the main significance that every jiva has is in love, whether a jiva appears to take a very important role within the world or not. So how do we handle both of these? You know, often when we think about our insignificance, we feel hopeless and maybe even sad, maybe even depressed, but especially hopeless and helpless, that just, well, why bother? You know, why should I bother doing anything? Because even if I'm apparently taking some big role, it's all forgotten. I mean, these Manus that rule for 71 yuga cycles, I would guess that none of us could list all the names of the Manus that are given in the Bhagavatam from memory. And so even if you have such a big position like that, eventually you fall into the same, you know, undifferentiated mass of jivas, and bhutva bhutva praliyate, when the universe is finished and everybody merges into Mahavishnu, then it's all gone, you know, all of the big buildings and the big political positions and all of that. So this can make us very depressed, and we can say, well, why bother? I have no value, no meaning. There's nothing I can do in this world that has any kind of permanence. And any illusion of permanence is such an illusion. It's so fleeting. And I my name isn't even known. My activities are not known. We can get very sad and become very much into tamagun, very lethargic. But we can also feel very joyful. Meditating on our insignificance can be one of the most liberating things we can possibly do. Why? Because it relieves us of this burden of trying to be something that we're not. you know, I was speaking the other day to one devotee, and she had many wonderful plans in service, without a doubt, the plans were in service, but all of them have fallen apart. She's lost all of her money, and her husband is gone, and all of her plans are finished. Everything is finished. And when I was talking with her, I said, you know, it will all be okay. And she said, you know, everyone's saying that to me. Everyone's saying it will be okay. She said, but I don't want to be okay. I want to be great. She said, I had wanted to do something great in the world. But it's such a relief that none of us are great, that even if we're Brahma, even if we're a Manu, you know, it becomes again insignificant. It becomes again nothing. That we don't need to prove ourselves to anyone. We don't need to accomplish anything in the world. We are insignificant. That's what we are. And being what we are is okay. We don't need to try to be something that we're not. There's sort of these two opposite pulls at the present time in at least Western human society, that, you know, just be who you are and be satisfied with who you are. And then the other thing is, you can make up who you are and pretend to be something that you're not, and everyone else has to kind of accept that. So, you know, sort of these two, both in the name of authenticity, but that you can be who you are, that it's okay. You know, that if you're a little overweight, or your skin isn't the best, or you don't have the most beautiful hair, or you don't have the highest IQ, or whatever, that it's okay. That you can be peaceful and happy with who you are. So ultimately, who am I? I'm a jiva that's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. And I can be okay with that. It's just, as I say, it's such a relief that I don't have to pretend to myself, and I don't have to pretend to anybody else, that I am particularly smart or beautiful or talented or rich or influential. I don't have to pretend to myself or anybody else that anything that I do in this world has anything even slightly related to permanence, that everything is temporary in the blink of an eye, no matter what I establish, what I produce, etc. And that that the world was spinning before my birth and it will go on spinning after my birth. And it's just this relief. I can be happily insignificant. However, we have a desire to be significant. We do. One could say that it's a need. We have a need for meaning in our life. We have a need for recognition, frankly. And how do we get into significance without being proud? Because generally, if we get into, well, I'm, you know, insignificant, we can feel hopeless or sad. And if I get into significance, then I can feel pride. So the way we get into insignificance with joy is authenticity. And the way we get into significance with joy is realizing that our significance is love. Our significance is subjective. It's not objective. So it's interesting, you know, our joy in our insignificance is being focused on objectivity. That I'm authentically objective, and therefore I can just relax into my insignificance. But the joy in being significant is that there's something beyond the objective. I am not simply an object. I am a person. I am a subject. And therefore there is subjectivity and there is relationship. My family is significant to me because they're my family, because I love them, I care about them. I mean, my mother and father and grandparents and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and siblings and nieces and nephews, they're no more significant than anybody else. But to me, they're significant. Isn't it? I mean, right now, at the present time, there are people being tortured, people being murdered, people being kidnapped. It's not that meaningful to me. But if somebody were to kidnap one of my grandkids and torture them, that would be very meaningful to me. Why? Because I care. And the same way, right now in the world, there are so many people getting awards and winning prizes and getting married and having children and getting a new job and buying a new house and doing all these wonderful things. And it doesn't mean anything to me, but if that was happening to somebody that I love, then it becomes something that's meaningful. It becomes something significant. One of my friends here broke her arm back in like February, March. And she does a lot of pujari work, but she couldn't dress the deities because her arm was broken. And it's healed enough. Just the other day, she finally dressed the deities for the first time since her injury. So this was a big celebration for those of us who love her. For anybody else, it's meaningless. So we find joy in our significance because it's a subjective relationship that the Lord has with us. And it's an amazing thing about the Lord that He has this unlimited love for each living entity. He has unlimited love for each of His unlimited living entities. Om Purnam Adal Purnam Idam Purnat Purnat Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adayam Purnam Eva Basishate. You can take the complete away from the complete, and still the complete remains. So the Lord can give unlimited love to me, and He still has unlimited love to give to you, and 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 to all the little ants and cells and microbes and every in all of the universes. And we just talked about the material world, which is just a tiny, tiny fraction of the whole existence. So in this way, we find joy. I am loved. I am loved. And my love, someone posted on social media the other day, everything we're doing is to try to be loved. And I said, no, a lot of what we're doing is to try to love. So I am infinitely loved by Krishna, and I can love Krishna. I can love Him in return. How much love would I feel for Krishna? I mean, how wonderful is He? How wonderful is His beauty? How wonderful are His qualities? How wonderful are His pastimes? Madhuradi pater akilam madhuram. Even how wonderful is His creation? How could I not love Him? And that is my significance, that I love Him. And whether I'm offering Him one eyedropper drop of water or whether I'm offering Him the rulership of the universe, to Him it's equal. He doesn't really see the universal ruler as being more important. I mean, even a great devotee like Priyavrata may be discriminating that he likes Bahirshmati more than his other wife. At least, again, it appears like that. I don't know whether that's true. We know Uttanapad liked Suruchi better than Suniti. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna's not like that. It's not that He's only loving His chief wife Rukmini and wife number 16,107 is neglected. It's not like that at all. To Krishna, every jiva, even the fallen conditioned jivas, are the source of His unlimited love. And He's able to receive full love from each jiva as well. So when we have this, it's kind of a paradox and a juxtaposition of our utter insignificance and our total significance. And if we hold those two things together, then every moment can be joyful. Every action we do can be joyful. That I'm not having this thought or feeling or action in order to prove my significance objectively, because that is impossible objectively. Objectively, I can never be significant. Even if I were to rule the universe like Priyavrata for some time, still, it's one tiny universe like a mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds that's being ruled for some time. What to speak of, you know, if I just do some little putzy thing on some little planet. At the same time, everything that I do, even if it's a little putzy thing, has ultimate significance to the ultimate person. And so I can do everything like that. Lord, I'm doing this to please You in this moment, not to try to prove anything, not to accomplish anything. As Krishna says, you have a right to perform a prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
chastisements.
Anybody want to go first? A question that was, well, what a fun class. I love the point about the sweetness of becoming insignificant. We don't have this false ego and to protect. That's,
yes.
That's lovely.
Yes, exactly.
My question, okay, so Krishna is the only one who can really love us in this world, truly, unlimitedly love us. What about in the spiritual world? Every living entity is connected to Krishna, part of Krishna. Sometimes we say there's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Of course, we know the pastime where when the cows got a little out of control, they ran away, and after they were stolen, they came back, and the parents of them loved them even more than their own children, but they still love their own children unlimitedly. How does that all work?
Well, Prabhupada talks about this in his commentary on... There's a lot of noise here. Someone has to be muted.
Yeah.
Maybe it's you. Don't worry. Try muting. Somebody has to.
I'll mute myself. I don't think it's me. It could be.
All right. So
now it's.
It's still not great. All right. So we have in Prabhupada's commentary where Queen Kunti says, "Please sever my tie of affection to my family members." And Prabhupada says, seeing in the darkness is not seeing, and seeing in the light is seeing. And if we have a relationship soul to soul via the super soul, that is a real relationship. So there's great love between, like, you know, Vishakha and Lalita love each other. Nanda and Yasoda love each other. Vasudev loves Devaki. Vasudev loves Rohini. You know, Subal and Sridhama love each other. Raktak and Patrak love each other. And, you know, Sridhama loves his cows and loves his mother and father and siblings. And so that's all there, but it's all Krishna-centered. We have, you know, that wonderful song, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, about the great love felt for a devotee. So, you know, that's also there when it's Krishna-centered. Now, as sadhakas, we have some struggle with this. As sadhakas, we may think, well, I'm a devotee and this person is a devotee, so we should be able to have pure love for each other. And we set up some expectations and often a feeling of entitlement that end up sometimes making the relationship worse than that of materialists who don't have that kind of an expectation that's being put on a relationship. So we just caution that for sadhakas who are still struggling with an artist, that our relationships between each other are mixed. They're somewhat pure on the platform of our spirituality, and they're also somewhat tainted by our feelings of entitlement and our feelings of pride and our feelings of hopelessness, depending on the particular mood. Is that all right?
Thank you. Very nice. Thank you.
Anybody else?
There's one little point while we're waiting for someone else. I was thinking you're trying to talk about how numerous living entities are. I was remembering there's a verse, I think in the sixth canto, where King Parikit is wanting Sukadeva Goswami to speak about the Vitrasura. And he's kind of bewildered, you know, it happened to demon. Living entities, there's so many living entities, and being a devotee is so incredibly rare. So he says, Rajo B. Samasankhyata Parthivad Ihajantava, which means that Rajo B. Samasankhyata, that equal as that in equal, Rajobi, the atoms, samasankhyata, they have an equal count, partiva ihijantava, as the living entities within this world. So, like in other words, that living entities are as numerous as there are atoms within this world, which is totally inconceivable. But that's stated in the sixth canto.
Yes.
I can print it.
Ramila Mataji, I have something I wanted to share. I don't remember if I told you this or not, but ever since I stopped watching videos and the news and all kinds of media, I found that the desire that I had when I was younger to be significant, have a lot of money, be famous, have my name in lights, that disappeared after that. I thought that was curious.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I mean, that seems to me that it's a matter of sangha, because the news and the media is all about that. That's what it's about. And without, of course, it's good to have some idea of what's going on in the news. We shouldn't be known as fools, at least to know some headlines of what's going on in the news. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Thank you for your excellent class. Prabhupada said that he will live forever in his books, in his instructions. And, of course, a disciple never wants to compare him or herself to the spiritual master, but one could argue that you live in your books for a long, long time. You must be mentioned in sites like Who's Who and so forth. You have your own website. As a matter of fact, practically all of us will outlast our physical lives by some kind of presence on the internet. It's all temporary, I understand, but it does sort of, it seems to change the game a little bit. Do you agree?
Well, but it's such a little bit. I mean, it's really just such a little bit. And first of all, most people's presence on media is very, very slight. And I know I was talking to Vishnumurti Prabhu in Radhadesh some years ago, and he was making the point that once an author has passed away, people don't buy their books so much anymore, because he's got all these books written by different ISKCON devotees. I mean, what I've noticed very starkly is if I want to sell a book, it's best if I travel around and sell it in person. That, you know, if I'm selling a book in person, just like the other day we went to Washington, D.C., Ramaphosa Swami was teaching Manashiksha, so I was selling copies of Manashiksha. We sold 30 copies, probably could have sold 50. But if I hadn't gone there, well, I wouldn't have sold 30 copies. You know, just so it's like that. He said once people are away from once they've passed away, people forget about them. And they're no longer that interested. So, you know, it's true up to a point, but very slightly. I mean, it's true up to a point, those of us who have children. There's probably some of the motive for wanting to have children is it's a way of trying to get some sort of, you know, DNA immortality. But even within our families, I mean, if I'm going to be really honest, I mean, my parents each passed away about 20 years ago. And I think about them, but not every day anymore. You know, the longer it's been since they've passed away, the more that I can go even a week without thinking about them. And what to speak of my grandparents, I only knew one grandparent. My other grandparents passed away before I was born. I never knew them. And how much do I think about the grandparents that I never knew? Well, practically not at all. Maybe, you know, a few times a year. And even the grandmother that I knew, I wasn't that close to her. So, you know, it really, and my own children, they had no contact with that one grandmother. They're not going to remember her. So it really dies out very quickly. It lasts just a very short time after our death. And even if you're extremely famous, I mean, I don't remember why, but the other day I was looking through a list of U.S. presidents. And I've taught U.S. history, but I was realizing I don't even remember all the names. I mean, if somebody sat me down and said, hey, list all the U.S. presidents, whatever, however many are there, 45, I wouldn't be able to do it.
And if someone said, well, what did they do? What did this president do? I'd be like, I don't know. You know, I could probably list the ones in the last maybe 50 years. So that's even very prominent people. Anyway, it's very insignificant. It really, it doesn't last very long at all. It doesn't affect very many people at all.
I have a question, or something that you could expand on. I was going to the temple some time ago, and on the way to the temple, there's a graveyard. So I was looking at, you know, the headstones and just seeing that. But it seems, you know, that the jiva, by his karma, yam yama peace marm bhavam, he gets a particular field of activities which is built upon his past desires, which were based on his other past desires. When you look at it, it just kind of disappears. What is the significance of the different lives? Well, in devotional life, you made a transition from conditioned life to devotional life. But for ordinarily, you know, you go through, what, 8,400,000 species, how many times from under Bhumite, you're just wandering on the Ferris wheel. So I was talking with one nice devotee that his father had passed away, and he said, well, who was that? Who is that? And what does he really have to do with that little speck of time where his particular karma manifested from just this date to that date, and then it goes on to another one? It just seems to be a wash. I mean, could you expand on it? It just seems like it's
Jivas, it's like that. It's like one of these hamsters on a wheel, you know, thinking they're right. I don't know what the hamster's thinking. But, you know, running, and going nowhere. Not really accomplishing anything of much value until the person makes that switch to have some connection with actual spiritual life. Yeah, it really, I mean, it's the Shastra compares our material life to a dream. But this relieves us, it really relieves us of the pressure, you know, like how much do I have to accomplish in a dream? But everything that I accomplish for Krishna is meaningful. It's meaningful because of the love. It's not meaningful because of the thing. Objectively, it has no meaning. Subjectively, it's full of meaning. So any moment that any jiva reaches out and tries to do something for Krishna, that's meaningful. All right, I should go now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.